This ROFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Good morning and welcome to The Performance Habit. I'm Josie Askin from Spring Coaching, and in this program we really get a little bit geeky. We explore the science behind how we think, how we behave, and ultimately how we create meaningful change that lasts so that we can get the most out of our life. Now today, I want to talk about something that sits underneath so many of the conversations I have with clients, but also family and friends, and if I'm brutally honest, myself as well. This thing, on the surface, it kind of looks like it's a confidence issue. But I actually think it goes much deeper. I think it's about trust, and more specifically, trust with ourselves. Now, I know I've said this before, but the people that I work with are incredibly capable people. They're experienced, intelligent, and really good at what they do. Probably just like you listening at home or at work or somewhere in between home and work. And because of this, other people trust them. They're often the go-to person. But usually, behind the scenes, there's one person who questions them, one person that doubts them and second guesses them. And given what I said at the start of the episode, I'm sure you can guess who I'm referring to. That's themselves. And when this happens, they often look outside for reassurance. They might wonder things like, am I good enough? Am I experienced enough? Am I ready enough? Am I skilled enough? And what's really interesting is that often there's loads and loads of evidence that says that they are more than enough, that they are experienced enough, that they are skilled enough, that they are ready or confident. They're just not aware of it. What hasn't translated yet, for whatever reasons, evidence and self-belief. And I find that we often talk about confidence as something that we either have or we don't. It's okay for them to do that. They have the confidence to carry it off. And it becomes one of those things that some people possess that other people are lucky enough to have. Kind of reminds me of those Maybelline ads. I don't know if they still exist, but this whole idea of maybe she was born with it. But I personally don't think that's how confidence works. I think confidence is something that we build over time. Sure, I'm sure that there are some people out there who are born with more confidence than other people, without a doubt. But that's not to say that confidence is a yes or no. It is something that can be built. And I actually think that's a really wonderful thing, because it means that confidence isn't reserved for just a certain type of person. It's not something you either got given or missed out on. And it is something that we can intentionally develop like any other skill or quality out there. And if you think about building confidence, I think it works in a very similar way to how trust is built between people. So if you think about someone that you trust, maybe someone that you trust to look after your children or your pet, or perhaps someone, if you absolutely had to, knowing that you should never actually do this, but if you absolutely had to give your PIN number or password to someone, who would that be? I'm guessing you probably wouldn't choose a random stranger on the street, and you probably didn't wake up one morning and decide, yes, I trust Bob enough to give him access to my bank account. Instead, trust in Bob was built over time. Perhaps they showed up when they said they would. They did what they said they would do, and they were consistent. And over time, your brain gathered all of this information and it formed a conclusion that Bob is someone that you can rely on. Because our clever brains, they notice patterns and they like to store evidence. And so next time you need someone to trust, your brain would go, what evidence do I have about trustworthy people? I know, Bob fits the bill. And I think our relationship with ourselves works in exactly the same way. So we create the self-trust, the self-belief, by creating evidence. Just like we did with Bob, evidence that we can rely on ourselves and that we can handle uncertainty and take action even when we don't feel completely ready. This is basically evidence that we can do hard things, and hopefully I'll remember to come back on the point of doing hard things because I've got a nice little habit that I want to share with you. Now, if you listened to last month's episode, and if you didn't, highly recommend going back and having a listen, you might remember that we talked about validation, that moment where we find ourselves looking outside ourselves for reassurance. Have I done this right? Do you agree? Am I making the right decision? You know, I have to say, validation is one of the greatest gifts we can give another human being because validation says, I see you, I hear you matter. And this is a wonderful thing, and feeling worthy is something we all crave, we all want. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with wanting encouragement or recognition from others. The challenge comes when external validation becomes the only thing that allows us to believe in ourselves. Because then ultimately we're handing our confidence over to someone else, our self-belief, our self-trust. And I shared last month my concerns, based on my own experiences, about the slippery slope that can lead to people relying on AI for that very purpose. And that would be like handing your confidence over to a robot. So the question becomes, if I don't turn to someone else to tell me I'm capable, what do I replace it with? And I think the answer there comes back to evidence. Evidence that we create through our own actions. So it may sound really cheesy and silly, but something that I've been building a habit around is whenever I complete a challenging task, no matter what it is, just something that I was a little bit anxious about ahead of time, as soon as I've done that thing, I say to myself, yay, more evidence that I can do hard things. And so I'm creating like a little evidence bank, maybe a vault, if you will, that Josie can do hard things. So that in the future, if I'm looking for someone that can do hard things, Josie comes to mind. And one of my favourite ideas, kind of that touches on this, is from James Clear, who is the author of Atomic Habits. And that's every action is a vote the type of person you want to become. And I really love this idea because it reminds us that identity isn't something we simply declare, it's something that we build, like confidence and trust. That every action reinforces the story about who we are. But I think if we go a little bit deeper, I think not only is every action a vote for the person you want to become, I think it's also a piece of evidence that you're becoming that person. And I think that's really cool because sometimes we dismiss our small actions because we don't feel that they're significant enough. We think, you know, well, I only went out for one run, or I only had one difficult conversation. But those moments matter because they're all evidence for your little evidence bank or evidence vault. Okay, so one run doesn't suddenly mean that you're a marathon runner, but it's evidence that you can run. And over time, all of those one runs could mean that you are a marathon runner. And one courageous conversation, one of those really gnarly, yucky, sick to the pit of your stomach conversations doesn't suddenly mean that these critical, difficult, challenging conversations are easy, but it is evidence that you can handle it, that you can do it, you can survive these difficult conversations. And each moment gives your brain new information, says, oh, this is something I can do, which is part of becoming who I am. And over time, these moments begin to change the way we see ourselves. And I think this is where this idea of fixed and growth mindset comes to play. You may have heard these terms before. They're covered in a book called Mindset by Carol Dweck. Hopefully I've pronounced her surname correctly. So a fixed mindset is this idea that our abilities, our personality, and our characters are something that's set in stone. Maybe things like, you know, I'm a people pleaser, or I'm not good with numbers. Maybe I'm not a leader, or I'm terrible with technology. And without realizing, we start treating these statements as facts, almost as though we're giving ourselves labels or maybe like a dictionary definition of who we are. But rather than being facts, we're actually just stories, stories that we have collected from our experiences, maybe from what people from our past have said to us, Or maybe they're for moments when we faced something difficult and we weren't able to get the outcome that we wanted. And what's interesting is that these stories that we tell ourselves shape our behaviour. If I believe I'm a people pleaser, I'll go along with whatever is said, even at the expense of what I want, just to avoid the uncomfortable possibility of someone being unhappy. And every time I avoid that difficult conversation and avoid someone else being unhappy, I reinforce that belief. See, I'm a people pleaser. People are pleased with me. The same thing can happen with creativity. If you've decided that you're not a creative person, you might stop putting forward ideas. You might assume that other people are the creative ones, and you might miss out on opportunities to experiment, to explore, and to learn new things. Not because you lack creativity, but because you've stopped looking for evidence that proves that you are creative. A growth mindset is kind of the opposite. It's the belief that every skill, quality, or trait can be learnt and developed. Just to clarify, a growth mindset doesn't mean that everything is easy, nor does it mean that you can absolutely do anything so long as you squeeze your eyes hard enough and wish for it on a shooting star. That's not how change works. A growth mindset is really about recognizing our current abilities and not the full story, that there's always room to grow and develop further if we allow ourselves the opportunity to try, even if sometimes we might miss. So instead of accepting that path label of "I'm a people pleaser," we might ask ourselves, "What would someone who values both themselves and others do here?" So I want to clarify, being thoughtful, being a considerate person and wanting to help other people isn't a bad thing. It's actually a really wonderful thing. So we want to keep that part. The challenge comes when caring for ourselves consistently comes at the expense of caring for ourselves. So perhaps the question isn't, how do I stop being a people pleaser? Maybe it's more, how do I become someone who values other people's needs while also giving my own needs a voice? And if need be, even a little bit. Sometimes adding that even a little bit can help at the end of these questions, particularly when you're getting into it at the start. Or maybe it's, what would one small moment of choosing myself look like? An itty bitty teeny small moment. Or maybe you're asking yourself, what evidence could I create that my needs, my opinions even, and my boundaries matter too? Even a little bit more. Because every time we do this, we create new pieces of evidence that demonstrates that we can be kind to ourselves and other people. Evidence that we can support others and ourselves. So we're not trying to be a completely different person. In this case, we're just expanding our definition by including an and rather than an or. And I think often we kind of get stuck here because we wait for confidence to arrive before we act. We can wait to feel ready to do something, to be in the mood, for the stars to align, or maybe we're waiting for proof that we can do something before we attempt it. But often we need to have that evidence first. Evidence that we can do the thing, and then confidence follows. This is something that I really like how it's covered in this book. There's this book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers. And she illustrates this idea really beautifully because it's not about eliminating the fear. Because if you wait till we feel completely confident, completely certain, and completely comfortable before we ever take any action, well, we're likely to be waiting for a very, very long time. So the goal is to build trust in ourselves that we can move forwards, even when fear is present. And in this book, she talks about these universal truths of fear. But ultimately, it comes down to this idea that whatever life throws at us, we can handle it. It's a fantastic book. So, this idea being that we can still feel nervous, but have that challenging conversation. We can still feel uncertain about what might happen, but still take that next step. And we can still feel uncomfortable about something, but still choose to be courageous. Because courage isn't the absence of fear, they can be felt together. It's the idea of and rather than or. And this idea of building identity through evidence Well, it came up recently in one of my coaching conversations. The client that I was working with was working through a challenge that I'm sure a lot of people can relate to. They were really stepping into their own as a leader and were thinking about what sort of leader they wanted to be. We had already had an earlier conversation around what qualities they thought made a good leader, and I have to say, equally not a good leader, because sometimes the best lessons of life in life are learning from people that are displaying behaviours that we don't want to model. And often we talk about, finding this role model and asking ourselves, what would Hilda do in the scenario, and then modelling them. But when I asked this client of mine to think about a particular person that modelled all of those qualities, they were stumped. And they truthfully answered that they couldn't think of one person that really embodied everything. So they kind of settled for a while, and I could see that they felt quite uncomfortable with this thing. I think they felt that they had failed because they couldn't name a person. But actually, I thought this was a real key lesson. Because when we explore this idea of the fact that this perfect leader of theirs didn't exist, that there was no perfect leader for them to copy, it's because no one is perfect. And that was a really liberating and freeing concept for my client, because I think all along they thought that they had to be this perfect leader, when in actual fact, when they thought about all the amazing leaders out there, there wasn't a single perfect leader. Of course, there were aspects of individuals, like I said, that they greatly admired in different people. Like there was someone in their office that just oozed this calm confidence that meant that people didn't question their boundaries if they said no. There was another that had this uncanny way of suggesting something to clients that always left the clients thinking it was their idea. There was another person that they admired who had this really nurturing and supportive vibe about them. They took the time to catch up and talk to staff members as people to ask about their lives. And then there was another leader who seemed to almost maintain normal office hours that was closest to achieving the elusive work-life balance that this particular person so wanted. And as a result, their team was able to follow suit. And so the list went on. So for my client, rather than looking for a single person to copy to be just like Jane, it was about intentionally creating themselves. And I use this term, I'm still not sure what was the best term to use, but creating a sort of Frankenstein version of themselves. And I know that Frankenstein's normally personified as a monster, but the idea that I was trying to get across is that instead of finding one perfect person, that they take the qualities they admire from different people and bring them together. So, for example, maybe there's someone who has incredible calmness under pressure. And maybe there's someone else who communicates with amazing clarity and kind of conviction. Maybe there's someone that's always able to bring humour into difficult situations at an appropriate level. Or maybe there's someone that always has the courage to be that person that says the things that need to be said. And you can collect up those qualities and learn from those people. But then there's another really important step. We get to choose what we don't want to take with us, because as I said, our role models aren't perfect. The people we admire have strengths, but they'll also have their own patterns, their own blind spots, and ways of operating that might not fit completely with the person that we want to become. And the beautiful thing about this creating of our own Frankenstein, is it's not about copying someone else. It's about intentionally choosing the type of person we want to show up as. Maybe it's thinking about, this quality really inspires me, or this behavior aligns with my values, or this is something I really want to practice. And it's asking ourselves, what would it look like for me to bring more of this into my own life? Again, you can add even a little bit if that helps. And what's cool about this is it shifts identity from something passive into something active. We're not waiting to discover who we are. We're actually actively participating in creating that version of ourselves. And this is where this idea of evidence comes back in. You can tell that I did science at university. Because every time you practice one of those qualities, you create another piece of evidence. So if you, for example, admire someone's calmness under pressure, maybe next time you face a stressful situation, you just pause for a moment and you collect your thoughts. And that's evidence of you being calm under pressure. Or if you admire someone's courage, you have a conversation that you've been avoiding. Again, evidence that you have courage too. Or if you admire someone's creativity, you give yourself permission to experiment, even if you don't know where things are going to go. And that, again, is evidence. And of course, you won't become that person overnight. I'm sure that's another tagline for another cosmetic version, maybe Pantene. But you create another small piece of proof, another vote, another reason to trust yourself. And so perhaps instead of asking, what would that person do? The question becomes, what would the version of me that I'm building choose to do here? Of course, collecting evidence isn't just about building confidence or identity. It's all about building that relationship with yourself, that idea of self-trust that we started talking about at the very start of this episode. So every time we take an action that is consistent with the person, the identity that we want to become, we're sending ourselves a message. I can handle different difficult things. I can make decisions. I can recover when things don't go to plan. I can figure things out. I can do hard things. And every time we act in alignment with the person we want to become, we strengthen that belief. And this is why small actions matter so much, because self-trust, self-belief, it's not about one big achievement. Just like confidence is built over time. It's built through those ordinary moments, those critical conversations that you finally have, the time you choose something that matters to you, even when it'd be easier just to say yes and go with the flow. Those moments are small deposits into your relationship with yourself. They create another piece of evidence for your evidence vault that says, I am someone who shows up. I am someone who can do hard things. I am someone I can rely on, and I am worthy. I am enough. And I think this becomes especially important in what I call the quiet middle, because this is the point where many people start to look for external reassurance, because that initial excitement, that kind of buzz that you get when you first start working towards something, that's worn off, and the results are no longer as visible as they used to be. I think it's this moment that we really need to double down on our self-trust and look for the evidence that supports that transformation is happening through the choices that you're making, through the way that you respond, and the promises that you keep to yourself. This is all evidence of the person you're becoming. So, as I come to the end of this month's program, I just want to leave you with three questions to ponder. This might be something you want to journal or reflect on, or just kind of let percolate or marinate over the next few weeks until we chat again. The first is, who do you want to be? Or to put it another way, how do you want to show up in the world? And it's really important that you respond to this honestly, not who you think you should become or not who someone else expects you to become, but who do you want to become? How do you want to show up in the world? The second question is really important. And that's, what evidence have you already collected about becoming this person? Because I think we're really, really good at noticing what we haven't done. And often we already have evidence that supports we are that person, we are becoming that person. But we often don't stop to notice the evidence that we already have. The difficult conversation you had, the time you said no, the moment you spoke up, even if your voice was shaking when you spoke, all of those moments count. They're all evidence. And it can be really helpful to draw those out. You're not starting from zero. You already have steps forwards. And finally, what's one piece of evidence that you could collect today? And of course, keeping with my kind of philosophy about small steps, this doesn't have to be anything huge. It doesn't have to be anything life-changing. In fact, I would recommend that you make it as small as possible. Just one small action that is connected to the version of yourself that you are becoming, that version that you want to be. Something that the future version of yourself would look back and say, yeah, I can see how this is evidence of the person that I want to be. And then, of course, go and do that thing. Thank you so much for joining me this month for the Performance Habit. I love having this time together to chat. I'm Josie from Spring Coaching, and I look forward to speaking to you next month. Of course, if you ever have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. All of my contact details are on the program page. So again, thank you so much. This is Josie Askin from Spring Coaching.